What do we do with this whole question of tithing? Hello and welcome to Good Word. I'm Dave Thomas, your host for this quarter. We are looking at a series of lessons on the subject of stewardship. Usually when people use that word, they tend to think of money. And actually the lesson today does invite us to look at money, in particular at the practice of tithing, which I presume you know is the injunction in the Bible to give 10% of gain to the Lord. And I'm happy to have two conversation partners again, Brant Berglund and Matilda Fry. As we look at this question of tithing, do we have any place in the Bible where we see it originating? What is tithing? How should people pay tithe today? Is there a right tithe and a wrong tithe? I throw it open to you for some discussion today. Maybe we should start with the question of the origins of this practice. What is the practice and what are its origins? That's the question.
The first time we read about somebody giving a tithe is with Abraham, when he comes back from a battle and has defeated the kings in Canaan. The king of Salem, which will be the later city of Jerusalem, by the name of Melchizedek, will come out and greet Abraham, and Abraham will give the tithe, the tenth of everything, to him first.
Now, by the way, Matilda, if I may interrupt you, the name Melchizedek is a very interesting name.
It is. He is...
It's not really a name.
He is the king of righteousness.
So, I mean, that's what the word means,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So how do we understand that? This was somebody who lived at Mount Moriah, the king of righteousness? This is a big question in the mind of people.
It also says in the passage that he was not just king of righteousness and king of the city of Salem, but that he was a priest of the Most High God, of El Elyon, right? The God of God, mm-hmm. Most High, which is interesting that he is both king and priest. You do not see too many king priests throughout Old Testament Israel's history. There was a separation sort of church and state, if I can use that phrase.
So what should we say about that? Is this God on earth in the Old Testament? Is this Jesus? Or how do we understand this?
Well, in the story of Abraham, he is a king, and he is a king of in Canaan, in this place called ancient Salem, and he is a righteous king, and Abraham acknowledges him as a king of the Most High God, possessor of heavens and earth. And it is the king himself who blessed Abraham by the God of the heavens of earth.
Wow.
And earth and heavens.
So in other words, what by coming to this king and by giving him a tithe, Abraham is recognizing that he has a right to something. The king has a right to this.
Yes,
right?
Yeah. Yes. He has a right to receive the first gift that he has brought back from the battle.
Mm.
Abraham will also not keep the rest of the goods that he brought back. He will give it up. Well,
yeah. He returns it back to its original owners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how should we understand this first story? I mean, this is the origin of a practice that is found throughout the Bible and enjoyed on people even to this day, I think, right?
Abraham is also the originator of the covenant of circumcision that Israel ends up carrying on up until the time of the apostles of Jesus. Much begins with Abraham. As the father of the Jewish faith, he is also then the father of the Christian faith in that same sense, since Christianity is based on Judaism. The tithe principle then is on solid footing. It's not just Abraham, though. We also see that Jacob... Abraham's grandson will do the same thing as he's traveling. God meets him.
Paid tithe to whom?
He says, I will give to you. Of all that you give to me, I will surely give a tenth to you. And so how was that demonstrated in Jacob's day? That's part of the question.
Yeah, see, that's the question that I'm driving at here. So what happened to the tithe that Abraham paid? Where did it go? We don't know. It went to the king, right?
It went to the king, but I think it is important to remember, like Brant said, he is the priest of God Most High.
Yeah.
And the ritual of tithe giving will become implemented in the priestly system later on in Israel, where the priests
will receive. So say more about that. How does that happen? It's an instruction Moses receives?
It is part of the Book of Numbers, chapter 18, where we have the duties of the Levites and then the priests, and they are put as people in charge of the sanctuary, especially the Levites, to take responsibility and managing the place, and then the priests especially for the sacrificial system inside the sanctuary. And both of these groups of people will not have land given to them in the when they will enter Canaan, but they are dependent on the gifts and the tithe of the people, and they will live of those gifts that they receive.
So they are not to encumber themselves with land and houses and all that. They are to devote themselves to the work of the temple.
Yes.
And the temple itself is sustained by tithe, and the people who work there are sustained by tithe.
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, it even says in Deuteronomy 12, verses 17 and 18, you're not allowed to eat within your gates the tithe of the grain and the oil and the wine. You actually have to bring them before the Lord your God at the temple, at that place where his name was, where the priests were, and that's where you bring your tithe.
So what's the record of tithe paying in the Bible? Do we see a long story of faithfulness? Do we see ups and downs? What do we see?
I think sadly we see an injunction in Numbers, Deuteronomy to do so, but I think we see a failing later on in Israel to do so, don't we? Prophet Malachi speaks of a lack of giving.
Yeah, because I mean, in Nehemiah, doesn't it, in Nehemiah's day they reinstitute the practice?
They do, yeah. In Nehemiah 10 and Nehemiah 13, in both those passages, it says that they again began to brought a tithe in. It makes me think that while they were exiles in Babylon, they were not tithing. Of course, how would they bring the money to the temple anyways? They weren't even allowed to leave Babylon.
So this practice is a very old practice. What does the New Testament say? Anything, Brent?
The New Testament.
Oh, by the way, Malachi 3 is interesting because it actually is quite a blunt statement about people who fail to return tithe. And maybe we should talk about that because, well, what about the storehouse? Well, no. Let's go to the New Testament first.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So one of Jesus' statements in Matthew 23, Jesus has struggled so long and hard with the Pharisees that he's kind of had enough in Matthew 23, and his frustration boils over, and he says, "You have neglected, you Pharisees and teachers of the law, you've neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness, but you've tithed even down to your spices. You've counted out 10 little grains of wheat or 10 little pieces of dill, and you've put one aside for God, but you've neglected being just and righteous." And God says, you should have done the former without neglecting the latter. You should have done the righteous acts without neglecting the tithing. So Jesus seems to give a sense in which tithing was appropriate even for those in his day. Later on in the New Testament, we don't hear about tithing so much specifically with that phrase, but we do hear that those who are ministers of the gospel should be paid for their work by those to whom they're laboring. Paul even quotes from the Old Testament, says, you shall not muzzle the ox while he's threshing, saying, look, even the ox gets to eat while he's threshing out the grain. If we're helping you with the gospel, shouldn't we be paid?
So in other words, the obviously the injunction to pay tithe has not gone away. It exists today. And the question comes in, how should tithe be used? What should it be used for? And it seems like the maintenance of what's the temple, what's the storehouse today?
There's a shift in the New Testament away from priesthood and the centrality of the Jerusalem temple to the centrality of the embodiment of Christ within the temple of his church, within the body of believers. Thus, the tithe then comes in the sharing with those in need in the body and sharing with those who are doing the work of sharing the gospel. So I wouldn't necessarily equate pastors with priests, but I would certainly say that the tithe principle is God's method for encouraging the work of the gospel to be spread.
Okay, I think that's pretty well established. So the storehouse maybe is where people think the work of God is being done?
Where people, where gospel workers, where people who go out and dedicate their lives fully to this work, and then need to be dependent on the living that comes from.
And so I wonder, what's the benefit of people being collaborative about this? Because you know there is that piece in the Old Testament where you basically use your tithe for a celebration. Mm. That's not very collaborative. Think of what happens when people collaborate and they spend their tithe in ways where there's an actual plan that they're trying to fund.
There's actually a beauty to this, I think, within the church that we're a part of course. The beauty is that in areas where there is not a strong financial base for ministry, if the tithe comes to a central place and is then used to distribute to lots of areas, wealthy places can help grow the gospel in other places. And that's a very fair way of doing ministry, I think.
Mm. So there's a responsibility that people have, believers, to have to pay tithe. Is there a responsibility to spend it well on the other side?
I think so. Now, the question is if I need to be in charge of that too, that is where I would rather give it up.
We have some examples in the Old Testament of priests who did not act righteously. The sons of Eli trustworthy.
I mean, they were taking more than was their due. They were mistreating people.
Mistreating the sacrifices and the offerings as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you see, in the story of Jesus, it comes down to each person in that sense too, because he will say, before you bring your offering to the temple, you also need to first take care of the important things. And the important things in that part is make sure your mother and your father are cared for before you bring the offering in the house of God. So if we believe that it is on the high level that people are in charge to be careful and responsible, it comes down to each individual also.
So I think it's fair to say then that if you pay tithe, there's a double blessing. There's a blessing because of your own recognition of God's work in your life, and the giving has a blessing, but there's also a blessing on the side of those who receive it. So, So 10% of what? Gain?
For me, it's 10%
of everything I have.
Yeah, for me, it's 10% of whatever comes across my financial record even before the government gets any.
Wow. Yeah. So, it's kind of hard to calculate gain these days, I think, in all the complicated formulas. But anyway, well, thank you for that. That's particularly interesting about the origin of tithe and the fact that the mandate continues and that it's a long historical story. So my thanks to Brent and Matilda for contributing to this discussion today. Our thanks to Jared Miller, our program engineer. And our thanks to you who listen to Good Word. We hear from you now and then. We're grateful for that. For now, for Good Word, I'm Dave Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.